Okay, the subject of today's shiur, Rishus of Kohen Shlita, the subject is Issur Chadash. Issur Chadash means the prohibition against the eating from the new grains. The word Chadash literally means new. So the problem is that Issur Chadash, this prohibition, is really new to many people. Many people really are not aware of Issur Chadash, the fact that there is some sort of a prohibition of this sort. When you have grains that take root in the ground after the second day of Pesach of 1 year, so any product which is produced from those grains, from the five grains of wheat, barley, spelt, oats, and rye, would be prohibited according to the Torah. That's the famous expression that you find in the Mishnayos, HaChadosh Asur Min HaTorah, until the following year, on the second day of Pesach, according to the Psukim in Parshas Emor, it seems that one has to wait until the Korban HaOmer is brought. Nowadays, we don't have a Korban HaOmer that's brought, so does that mean that the grains are also forever? No. When there is a no Korban HaOmer, so then the Itzumo Shoyom permits the eating of the new crop of grain from the previous year, and that is what the double Lashon teaches us in Parshas Emor. We're told that when you come into the land, Gisaboa la'aretz, Ktsartemes Ktsira, that you're supposed to then reap the wheat, Rabbi Semes Omer, and with the new wheat, or actually the barley, you bring a Korban Omer, Rishis Ktsirchem El HaKohen, Vehinifes Om Lifnei Hashem, and you do a special Omer offering, which requires a waving, Vehlechem Vekaliva Kamel Losuch Luad Etzemayam Mazet. But you're not allowed to eat any kind of bread or roasted kernels, parched kernels, up until Ad Etzem Hayom Hazeh, until this day when this is done. When is it done? We're told me Macharas HaShabbos Yinifenu HaKohen. From the day after the Shabbos, we know there was a big machlokis between the Tzidukim and the Prushim. How do you interpret me Macharas HaShabbos? So according to the Mesorah of the Torah, Macharas HaShabbos means the day after Pesach. Not on a Sunday. It means the day after Pesach. So that's the second day of Pesach. Tezayin Nisan, the 16th day of Nisan. So we're told that Etzayim HaYom HaZeh, until that the essence of that day, Ad HaViyachem Es Korban Eloheichem, until you bring this Korban HaOmer, which is brought from the new barley grains. This is a chukah, this is a special law. B'chom moshvoseichem sounds like all of your dwelling places, right? That's a machlokis, how exactly to interpret that term. That until the essence of this day, when you bring the Korban HaOmer, you can't eat from the new crop. And we know that the whole mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer begins from the bringing of the Korban HaOmer. Usvatem lachem imacharas haShabbos miyom aviyachem es Omer hatenufa, from when you would bring the Korban HaOmer, sheva Shabbosos tmimos tiyena. That's why most poskim assume that bisman hazeh, that we don't actually bring a Korban HaOmer. Sfiras HaOmer is only a derabbanan nowadays. It's not a deraisa. The Rambam holds that it's a deraisa. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik famously explained that because the Rambam's of the opinion that the Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash was never nullified, so therefore, strictly speaking, we still should bring a Korban HaOmer nowadays because of various technical reasons that we don't have the requisite Tara, we don't have the access to the Makom HaMizbeach, Big Day Kahuna, etc., etc., so we're not able to bring a Korbanos. But technically speaking, it really would be within the realm of possibility. So Chaim Soloveitchik explains, that's why according to the Rambam, it is still considered to be a mitzvah d'oraisa nowadays. We generally assume we don't bring the Korban HaOmer, so it's a mitzvah d'rabbanan nowadays. But in terms of the Issur Chadash, so since we have this double lashon on Etzem HaYom HaZeh, and Ad HaViyachem Es Korban Elokeichem, so the Gemara mentions in Menachos and Rosh Hashanah and elsewhere that there is a Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that there's a Torah law that says that when you don't bring the Korban HaOmer, you have to wait until the essence of the day. But the essence of the day doesn't mean the beginning of the 16th day of Nisan. It means until you get to the end of the 16th day of Nisan. And this is relevant to the discussion regarding the Takana of Rabbi Yochanan and Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made a Takana, which is recorded in the Mishnah, Hashashadim, Menachos, etc. Hehiskim Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai she Yom Hanef Kulo Aser. That he made a Takana, the Yom Hanef, that the second day of Pesach, the Tezai and Nisan, the entire day it's going to be Aser to eat from the new grain after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Mishachar Beis HaMikdash. And this was so that people would have in mind Mehera Yibana Beis HaMikdash, and they shouldn't make a mistake of thinking that just because it was the previous year that you were allowed to eat on the 16th day of Nisan before the Korban Omer was brought. That's according to, let's say, the opinion Heyer Pnei HaMizrach, that as soon as the 16th day would arrive, Ad Esim HaYom HaZeh would teach me that you could bring the Korban, that you would be allowed to start eating Chadash when you don't bring the Korban HaOmer. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, well, people might make a mistake if it's the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt. They won't realize they have to wait until the Korban HaOmer is brought. So either you would know when the Korban HaOmer is brought, or if you were somewhere else where you weren't right next to the Beis HaMikdash, you could generally assume Kohanim's reason pain, the Korbanos are going to get offered quickly. So by 12 noon, by noontime, you could assume that the Korban HaOmer was brought. You'd be allowed to eat the Chadash, so people wouldn't know to wait. So that was sort of the first assumption of what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was misaking. So he said, just to be on the safe side, we're going to wait until the end of the day altogether. So the Gemara concludes that really what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was saying was that he was holding like Rabbi Yehuda, that Rabbi Yehuda says, no, this isn't a din de Rabbanan, that we're going to not allow you to eat from the Chadash at the beginning of the day when the Korban HaOmer is not brought. That's a din d'araisa. The din d'araisa is that Ad Etzem HaYom HaZeh teaches me that when the Beis HaMikdash is not around, then you're not bringing a Korban HaOmer, so then you have to wait until the very, very end of the day before you can start eating the Chadash. It's just that people didn't necessarily know the din so well. So when it says the Hiskin, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, so the Gemara explains the Darash for Hiskin, that he darshin. He darshin the Pasuk, like Rabbi Yehuda, that really you have to wait until the end of the 16th day before you'd be allowed to eat from the Chadash. So the Gemara quotes the opinion of Ravina, who says that he was told by his mother that his father did not eat in Chutz La'aretz the Chadash until the end of the 17th day, because since there's a Sfeika D'Yoma in Chutz La'aretz as to which is really the first day of Pesach, which is really the second day of Pesach, so we have to be worried that what we consider to be the third day of Pesach, Yud Zayin Nisan, is really the second day of Pesach, and we have to wait until the end of the day of Tes Zayin Nisan before eating the Chadash. So in Chutz La'aretz, you have to wait until the end of the day of Yud Zayin. So here we would have to wait until the end of the third day of Pesach before we could eat from the new crop. But it certainly sounds from the Gemara that Chadash was observed not only in Eretz Yisrael, but also in Chutz La'aretz. So if it's observed not only in Eretz Yisrael, but also in Chutz La'aretz, why is it that so many people here in Chutz La'aretz don't seem to know too much about the Yisra of Chadash? It's very interesting because I work for a kashrus organization, the Chicago Rabbinical Council, and there are various practices that are viewed as chumras, maybe, that people take upon themselves extra stringencies, but sometimes these chumras take a life of their own, and people just consider it to be absolutely treif if you don't observe certain chumra. So there are certain things where there would be individuals in the community who would be absolutely scandalized if you didn't keep them, you know, really rigorously and follow every single chumra. So you find that with respect, for example, to Chol of Yisrael. Chol of Yisrael is a din de Rabbanan that a Jew has to watch when a cow is milked to make sure that no non-kosher milk was mixed in together with the kosher milk. And that's a din de Rabbanan. It's not a din de Raisa. De Raisa, you could rely upon other presumptions, presumably, if you know that there are kosher ingredients and the like. You don't have to actually watch the milking process, but that's a din de Rabbanan. And there are various kulos the poskim have nowadays, the most famous one being Rav Moshe Feinstein, who says that when you have governmental supervision, so it's considered like an anan sa'adi, it's like our yediyah, our clear knowledge that the milk manufacturers are going to be super careful not to violate governmental regulations, because otherwise they're going to lose their milk-making license, is good enough to be considered like a re'iyah, like we're actually standing there on the farm watching the milking process. And therefore, you call of stam, even milk that is not being watched by a Jew per se, but is subject to governmental regulation, would be permitted for consumption. It's a famous kula of Rav Moshe. Before Rav Moshe, there was the kula of the pre-chadosh, that if it would be very expensive and not worth somebody's while, there were no non-kosher cows, or non-kosher animals, like camels or whatever, in the vicinity from which milk was made, so you wouldn't have to worry at all about there being non-kosher milk mixed in. So many European gedolim were not comfortable relying upon the kula of the pre-chadosh. Famously, the Chassam Sofer wasn't comfortable with it, Chashulchan wasn't comfortable with it, etc. But Rav Moshe said, you can rely upon my kula, which is as if there's a Jew actually watching it because of governmental supervision, even if you're not going to rely upon the pre-chadosh. So nowadays, there are people who would be absolutely scandalized if you had a restaurant and the milk and the milk dairy products, woman chalav Yisrael, that would be like a terrible thing. And the people are extremely machmir about chalav Yisrael. Similarly, pas Yisrael. So the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch paskins that we have a din de rabbanan, that we don't want to rely upon the pasta bread that's made by non-Jews, because we're worried you're going to get too chummy with them, you'll intermarry with them, even if all the ingredients are 100% kosher, even if there's no problem with the kalim. But nonetheless, that's a special din of a pasakum. But we are, the Ramah says, that we're basically mako with respect to paspalter, as long as it's produced like in a bakery context, where you're not going to get cozy with the non-Jewish baker. And even the Machaber, who's machmir about it, has heterim in times of great need and so forth. But we instituted it amongst our kosher establishments in Chicago that every single place has to have only Pas Yisrael. And though it's a din de rabbanan, Sechumer bi'amo, the Ramah is mako maker a din. But nonetheless, people feel that we have to go an extra level above and beyond because we have to be particularly holy and all that. So people are very, very machmir about this. Chadosh, I just mentioned it's an Issa d'Oraisa. We're not talking about an Issa d'Rabbanan over here. We're not talking about a Chumer b'Yama. We're talking about an Issa d'Oraisa. And most people don't even ask the question whether something is Chadosh or whether it's not Chadosh. That particular stringency or din, according to many opinions, is not practiced widely, and we have to figure out exactly why that is. Chadosh was not circumscribed, as we have seen, by whether the Beis HaMikdash was standing or not. The time as to when Chadosh becomes permitted, yeah, that's circumscribed, because the time would be when the Korban Omer was born and when there's no Beis HaMikdash. So it's either, according to some Amoraim, it's based on Heir Pnei Mizrach, it would be strictly permitted at the beginning of the day, and according to the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, no, that you have to wait until the end of the day when the Beis HaMikdash is not built, Me'ikar Adin, on a D'Oraisa level. Okay, so fine. So we know that's certainly true in Eretz Yisrael. Why would it not be true with respect to Chutz La'aretz? That's the question. So the Rambam, in Hilchos Macholos Asuros Paskins, Hechadosh, what is the din Hechadosh? Kol echan mechame, misha minei tvua, bovad osa lecha mechadosh shalo, kodem sheikru ava omer betesai minison. You're not allowed to eat from the new crops that took root in the ground, where the grain took root in the ground after the previous Pesach, second day of Pesach, v'zmanch, which means it would have had to have been planted at least 2 weeks beforehand. V'zman she'en beis hamikdash kol hayom, this is machlokis, whether it takes 3 days to take root or two weeks to take root, where machmir for the shita takes 2 weeks. V'zman she'en beis hamikdash kol hayom kulu asa min haTorah. And the Rambam paskins like Rabbi Yehuda, that when there's no beis hamikdash, the entire second day of Pesach is also the entire day. V'zman hazeh, b'mekom ha'osin, And then he says, like we mentioned before, that in Chutz La'aretz, it's going to be also up until the end of the 17th day. That's Midivrei Sofrim. But otherwise, says the Rambam, and he doesn't distinguish between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. He says, Kol Yom Kulo is Asa Min HaTorah. That the second day of Pesach, the entire, up until the end of the second day of Pesach, the Chodesh is Asa Min HaTorah. So, in fact, this appears to be what the Mishnayos say as well. There's a Stam Mishnah Maseches Orla that says Hechadish Asim in the Torah b'chol makom. The Chodesh is Asim in the Torah, and for good measure, the Mishnah mentions it's a b'chol makom, not only in Eretz Yisrael but outside of Eretz Yisrael as well. Therefore, the Stam Mishnah seems to hold this way. There is a Mishnah Maseches Kiddushin, the first parak of Maseches Kiddushin, which has this as a machlokis between the Tanakam and Rabbi Eliezer. The Mishnah says, "Kol mitzvah shitliya baris ein noheges v'la'aretz, she'ein tliya baris noheges bein baris bein b'chutz la'aretz." That generally speaking, if a mitzvah is tliya baris, meaning that it's an agricultural law, so then it's really only midoraisa in Eretz Yisrael. And it doesn't apply outside of Eretz Yisrael. But we do have a couple of exceptions. So the Tanakhama says there are only two exceptions. What are the two exceptions? Chutzmin, ha'orla ve'akilayim. The two exceptions are orla and kilayim, where we have a halach l'moshe misinai, that orla is applicable even outside of Israel. If you know you have a tree in your backyard that the fruit are in the first 3 years of their growth, you're not allowed to eat that even in chutz la'aretz. If you don't know, it's a special halach l'moshe misinai. You don't know, you don't have to ask. If it's chutz, if it grew in chutz la'aretz, as long as you don't know, then it's going to be permissible. The same thing is kilei hakerem, any kind of mixed of species that are bred in a vineyard, any kind of wheat, barley vegetation that is planted in a vineyard is going to be usher in chutz la'aretz as well. But that's it. It sounds like chodesh is okay in chutz la'aretz. Now we know it can't be 100% okay, because the Gemara had a bunch of different shitos about, we quoted the shita of Ravina, which is the most stringent shita about how long do you have to wait in chutz la'aretz before you're allowed to eat the chodesh. So we know it's going to be usher, at least midrabanan is going to be usher. But according to the Tanakhama, it's okay on a Doraisa level. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Ap Min HaChodesh. Rabbi Eliezer says, no, even Min HaChodesh, that's also going to be Aser. Sounds like on a Doraisa level, it's going to be Aser. And that's consistent with the Mishnah in Maseches Orla, and that's consistent with the ruling of the Rambam. Says the Tosfos, the Maseches Kiddushin Daf Lamed Vav, says Tosfos, yeah, so nowadays, you got to be careful about Chodesh. No cooler. There's no leniency. We know the Chodesh Noeg Bisman is there. It certainly is applicable nowadays. If you know that the barley or any of the other five grains were planted at, or took root after the time that the Omer was brought, the Hainuaka Yudva Benisan Shloyokam, you're not allowed to eat from them. That's the din. However, as says Tosfos, that there is a possible leniency. So we have leniency number one. We're going to see the number of leniencies. So Tosfos says, you can follow Rov. We have a general rule, midaraisa, hokin akara Rov, right? That v'kiman derova sarim niso kom tesai minisan, if you don't know for sure that the barleys were planted after the previous year's second day of Pesach, and therefore you can assume that it came from an earlier crop, says Tosfos, because rova sarim niso kom tesai minisan. We generally have different plantings during the year. This is what we call winter planting. That's for a wheat crop. We call that the winter wheat. And then there's the spring planting, the spring crop, the spring wheat. Says Tosfos, at least in the regions where Tosfos lived, most of the wheat came from the winter crop, where whatever they're selling in the stores took root before Pesach. So the Tosfos says you could rely upon rove. Now that's only true, says Tosfos, if the rove is that you know that most of the wheat, barley, etc., took root before the previous Pesach, but otherwise you wouldn't be able to rely upon rove, particularly if we're dealing with a deraisa. Then Tosfos throws in, for good measure, you might want to say that maybe Chodosh is only a problem if it grew on the fields that were owned by a Jew. But let's say it grew on a field that were owned by a non-Jew, maybe that's okay. So Tosfos says no, because we know that there's one exception with respect to a type of a food that's going to be usher if it grew on a Jewish field but not on a non-Jewish field, and that is specifically singled out And it doesn't say that there's a second exception. What's the type of food where we say that it's not going to be a problem if it was made by a non-Jew with a non-Jewish crop? So that is if I'm dealing with challah. If I'm taking challah, so there's no obligation if I have pastries and cakes that are baked by a non-Jewish bakery with proper Jewish supervision, obviously. So then there isn't going to be a problem of taking challah. You don't have to take challah unless at the time in which the dough was mixed, it belonged to a Jew. So he says, Yushalmi napi mashma, the chadash noeg apashilov dekochavim. So from the Yushalmi, he says, it appears clear that chadash applies even with crops that grew in non-Jewish soil. Because the Mishnah says, why didn't our, the Yerushalmi says, why didn't our Mishnah say, af hechadosh, the chadosh, why didn't it say, excuse me, lotani chala? Why didn't it say, oh, the chala is also applicable outside of Eretz Yisrael? When Rabbi Eliezer said, oh, you should know chadosh is applicable outside Eretz Yisrael, why didn't it throw in chala? We do have a din of chala schutz laretz. So the Yerushalmi answers, the Mishnah of Yisrael, the Mishnah of the Kochavim. Because chala doesn't apply if the flour belongs to Ovi Kochavim. So mashma the chadosh diktari masdisa noig b'shel Ovi Kochavim. So therefore it follows that when our Mishnah says chadosh, that is mentioned explicitly, it must be because it applies both to the grains that grew in a Jewish field and grains that grew in a non-Jewish field. So now we have a few things that we've established. Chadosh appears to be usher midaraisa. It appears to be usher in chutz la'aretz. It appears to be usher even if it grew in non-Jewish fields. What could a possible leniency be? So Tosfos gave leniency number one. If the majority of grains took root before Pesach, so then you could rely upon the majority. The Rosh, in his Shilos Tshuvos, Klal Beis Siman Aleph, brings another possible kula, and he says that another possible kula might be that he quotes Rabbeinu Baruch. Rabbeinu Baruch says that the way that the Rosh understands Rabbeinu Baruch, the Rabbeinu Baruch seems to be saying that it doesn't apply to any crops that grew in a non-Jewish field, but the Rosh disagrees. But then Rabbeinu Baruch says, so therefore, even if it grew in a Jewish field and it was chutz la'aretz, so then we could be mako because there wouldn't be a gezerah even on a derabbanan level unless it was some type of a land that was right next to Eretz Yisrael. Meaning that to the extent the chadash would apply outside of Israel, it would apply to Jewish fields, and it would apply only to those fields that were right next to Eretz Yisrael. Like with Trumas Umaisos, we say, okay, it's Noeg B'Suria, we're worried, maybe you'll bring it into Eretz Yisrael, you'll think that people will start eating this type of grain, and they'll get confused and eat the grain, which is also here in Eretz Yisrael, so therefore we're going to prohibit, but Aratzos Asmuchos to Eretz Yisrael. The Rosh says, Dvar Etzimuin, because even according to his Shita, that it doesn't really apply with non-Jewish grain, but if it grew in a Jewish field, then it's not a gzera drabbanon that we would say, oh, well, it's a drabbanon, so it only applies to the lands that are near Israel. It says, b'chutz la'aretz asur min ha'Torah. It's in chutz la'aretz to the extent that it's asur min ha'Torah. So he didn't understand the shita altogether, but Rabbeinu Baruch is quoted by later authorities as holding a little bit of a different shita, namely that chadash really is only midrabbanan usher, that we really hold like the Tana Kama. How is it that we could hold like the Tana Kama? Well, that's what the Or Zeruah said already. The Or Zeruah is an early Rishon. Or Zeruah was trying to also explain away the minhag that there were so many Jews who were eating chadash already in the European lands where he had lived, and it was kind of confusing if chadash is also min ha'Torah. So he said, well, maybe the assumption is that it's only midrabbanan, because after all, we have a machlokis in Maseches Kiddushin. Tana Kama holds it's only midrabbanan, because so it's only Rabbi Eliezer adds that a chadash is also, b'chol makom min ha'Torah, presumably. So therefore, since it's machlokis Tana Kama, which would be ostensibly Shitas Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer, so we follow the Shitas Chachamim. There's a star mission in Maseches Orla that indicates that we hold like Rabbi Eliezer, and maybe this is a machlokis ve'chakach stam, because there's no real clear seder to Mishnayos in different Siddurim, so we don't know which one came first. But if it would be a machlokis ve'chakach stam, so then the rule is that we would follow the stam Mishnah. So he argues, nah, there's another stam Mishnah in Maseches Menachos that seems to follow the opinion of the Tanakhama, because the stam Mishnah in Maseches Menachos says that you're only allowed to bring the Korban HaOmer from grains that, from barley grains that grew within Eretz Yisrael. So he argues that it appears from the Gemara, although it's not 100% mochach, but it appears from the Gemara that it's sort of a direct equation, that from wherever Chodesh is going to be Aser, that's where you would be allowed to bring the grain, you would be allowed to bring the Korban Omer from those grains. So if I say that I can't bring the Korban Omer from the grains of Chutz La'aretz, that means that it must be that in Chutz La'aretz it's only an Isser Derabanan and not an Isser Deraisa. And since this is in Menachos, it's actually talking about the laws of the Korban HaOmer and the laws of Chadosh and Yashon and so forth. So this has a more strength, this has more of a binding precedent than the Mishnah, which is in Maseches Orla. And therefore, this Stam Mishnah has to be viewed as the main Stam Mishnah that seems to support the opinion of the Tanakhama, in which case we could say that Chodesh and Chutz La'aretz is only Midrabanan. Once it's only Midrabanan, okay. So then there's room to say that whenever you're not sure, maybe you don't know about certain grain. Is it Chodesh? Is it Yashon? So then there's more room to be makel and to say, well, speka derabanan lekula in such a situation. The Rosh himself doesn't like any of these opinions. The Rosh is of the opinion that it appears pretty clear that we have to assume that Chodesh is Aser min haTorah. And he says that this is also consistent with the discussion in Maseches Kiddushin, where Rabbi Yishmael seems to say, wherever it says, B'chol Moshvo Seichem has an indication that it means in all of the places where you reside, Eretz Yisrael and outside of Eretz Yisrael. So he introduces this idea of a Sfeik Sfeika, which is the subject of a lot of controversy, but it's actually brought by the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch, in Yoredeah, in Hilchos Chodesh. The Ramah says, based on this idea, maybe you could rely on a Sfeik Sfeika. Even on a Deraisa, you could rely on a Sfeik Sfeika. What's the Sfeik Sfeika? That any grain that comes before me, maybe it's from last year's crop, and even if it's from this year's crop, maybe it took root prior to the second day of Pesach. So therefore, maybe it was already permitted by the Korban HaOmer, and if it wasn't because it wasn't fully grown, nonetheless, it hadn't grown a shlish, but nonetheless, if it had already taken root prior to the bringing of the Korban HaOmer, so then it's from this year's crop, but it also would not be prohibited. So therefore, that's kind of like a Sfeik Sfeika. And some argue, what do you mean Sfeik Sfeika? It's a Sfeik Sfeika Mishem Echad. It's just right that the Tosfos in Kiddush in Ksuvos and Daf Tes Amud Aleph famously says Shem Ones Chadu, that you can't make a Sfeik Sfeika Mishem Echad. If there's a question whether a person marries a woman and there's only one suffix, was she raped, was she not raped? Only one suffix, if she turns out not to be a besula, did she have relations before the Arison or was it after the Arison? But it's not a Sfeik Sfeika. So then the husband says, Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, Neman Leosro Alav, she becomes forbidden to him. But not if it's a Sfeik Sfeika, says Tosos. Tosos says that the Gemara indicates that it would be that in a case where you had a girl who was where the Arison took place prior to her being a katana, so then I wouldn't have a Sfeik Sfeika, indicates that the Gemara is only one suffix, so therefore husbands are believed to prohibit the wife when he marries her, and he says, Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, because it's only a question of, was she raped
After that time or not, but not that she have relations beforehand, because she couldn't have had relations that would cause her besulim to go away if it was prior to the age of three, if the erusin took place when her father married her off prior to the age of three. So Tosu says, well, maybe you could still have a sfeik sfeika, because maybe she had relations when she was a ketana, in which case we would say pitoy ketana onesu, or maybe it happened when she was raped when she was a gedola. So either she was raped when she was a gedola, or even if she had relations willingly, but she was a ketana, so we'll treat that as pitoy ketana onesu. So Tosa says, well, that's one suffix. One suffix, was it an onus or not? Even if she was seduced, it's still considered to be an onus. So that's not a sfeik sfeika. So the same thing over here. Did the grains take root prior to the second day of Pesach? It doesn't matter if the grains had been harvested from the previous year's crop before the second day of Pesach, or whether they didn't take root, or whether they were in the ground and didn't take root. The one suffix that I have is, did they take root before the second day of Pesach so that they're permitted, or did they not take root so that they're not permitted? So therefore, there's a big question with respect to this fake sfeika of the Rosh. But nonetheless, it is quoted by the Rama. Rav Soloveitchik is quoted in the Harare Kedem as saying, no, it is really not Mishem Echad, because it represents different things. If you had last year's crop, where the grain had already been more than one-third grown, so then the Omer offering caused them to be permitted. It caused that grain to be permitted. But if they just took root in the ground and were not one-third grown, so it's not that the Omer permits it, it's just that it was never prohibited in the first place. It was never prohibited in the first place. And so therefore, it's not exactly considered to be Mishei Mechot. So that's the sfeik sfeika. But it's very, very shver, because even when you come up with this sfeik sfeika, number one, it's Mishei Mechot. Number two, it's a big question, can I say a sfeik sfeika with respect to a davar sheyesh lo matirin? And Chodesh is a classic example, like the Gemara Maseches Nedarim Daf Nun Ches says, that Chodesh is a classic example of davar sheyesh lo matirin. What does Rashi famously say? A davar sheyesh lo matirin has no bittul whatsoever, because ad sheyochlenu be'asur yochlenu be'heter, wait until it's going to be permitted. After the second day of Pesach, and Chutz La'aretz after the third day of Pesach, it's going to be permitted anyway. So why rely upon a sfeik sfeika? So that's also a whole big question, whether the sfeik sfeika works here altogether. So that's, some say, a very shvacha explanation as to why we could be a mekel. Came along as the Bach, and the Bach suggested that the assumption of Tosfos and the assumption of the Rosh that Chodesh applies even with respect to crops that grew on non-Jewish fields is incorrect. He says it's incorrect. You don't find, look at the Rambam. The Rambam never says explicitly that the Chodesh is also b'chutz la'aretz, whether it's a Jewish field or whether it's a non-Jewish field. But if you look at what he wrote with respect to Orla, he wrote explicitly that Orla is noeg ap b'shil goyim. So says the Bach, and he brings other proofs as well, from Gibor Rosh Hashanah, that we see that since it says kitzirachem, you could only bring the Omer offering from kitzirachem, from your own crops and not from non-Jewish crops. So the same way the Or Zeruah wanted to argue that if you couldn't bring from the outside of Israel for the Korban Omer, that means that it wasn't subject to the Issur of Chodesh, at least on a Daraisa level. So the Bach says the same thing with respect to non-Jewish crops, except according to the Bach, it wouldn't be applicable altogether, that it simply is a Heter Gomer. If you had non-Jewish crops, that any Chodesh, any new grains that came from those crops, says the Bach, would be 100% Mutter. And the Vilna Gaon took very, very sharp exception to this opinion of the Bach. The Chagas Aryeh took very, very sharp exception. Chagas Aryeh has a number of tshuvos that he wrote that are devoted to Dine Chodosh, and Simon Gimel of the Chagas Aryeh collection of these tshuvos were very, very harsh. It was a very harsh tshuva in which he rebuts all of the proofs of the Bach. But the Bach was felt that it was a very important thing that he came up with this chiddush, that he came up with this conclusion, even though he said it's true, it's against Tosfos, and it's against the interpretation of Tosfos of the Yerushalmi. But nonetheless, he felt that it was emes alamito. There is a legend that apparently the Baal Shem Tov had a vision or a dream or heard a bas call, something of that sort, that when the Bach died, they cooled the fires of Gehenna for 40 days in celebration of the fact that he had presumably succeeded in getting so many people out of Gehenna because of his great chiddush, that grains that grew on non-Jewish fields were not subject to the prohibition of a chadash. And in fact, in many Hasidish communities, they hold by this shita of the Bach very, very strongly. Remember, the Bach was viewed as kind of like a progenitor to Hasidish Rebbes because he was in Belz, so the Belz Hasidim have claimed the Bach as one of his own. The Best also came from a town where the Bach was. So therefore, there was a very strong connection with the Bach. The Bach happens to be an ancestor of mine. So the Bach did say that you have to be very, very careful if you're going to be critical of any kulos with respect to Chadash. He said, you have to understand that there were many great gedolim who relied upon the assumption that Chadash in Chutz La'aretz is okay, and therefore you cannot get too worked up about this particular issue. L'chein ein l'shum gadol l'hovo sarah l'yisr hefech ha-minik sh'nago pi gadol l'yisrael l'hetu mishirot l'hachme l'atzmo. You want to be machme for yourself and say, oh, chadash asim min ha-Torah, that appears from, after all, the Rif, the Rosh, and the Rambam, all happened to Paskin, as the Shulchan Aruch, Paskin, that the chadash is asim min ha-Torah b'chutz la'aretz, but he says, that's a mizas chasidus hu, v'lo yore la'acher, that you should not impose that chumrah upon others. So now we can understand why maybe it is that people don't get as fussy with respect to chadash as they do about other dinim, even though they seem to be less chumrah on their face. So laisi linsuye bedavka b'misha horga b'sha precious and reforsam l'chosid v'shai linhog l'yisr gam b'zu. So he says, even in terms of being permitted to be machmir about this, you better be a real, real chassid, by somebody who follows all the chumras, if you want to be machmir about this one. So, as I said, there was a fierce battle about to what degree one could rely upon the Bach, the Taz. The Bach's own son-in-law was not so crazy about relying upon the Bach. He said, well, you know, it's true, my father-in-law tried hard and mightily, but it's difficult to go against Tosfos. But Nataz said, look, the truth of the matter is the Gemara never explicitly paskins one way or another. The Gemara never says that we explicitly paskin like Rabbi Eliezer, or that we explicitly paskin like the Chachamim. So therefore he says, it's true that we follow the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer, but it's not because we know for sure that that's the Halacha. It's because we're worried that that's the Halacha. We don't know whether it's a Stam Mechakak Machlokes, in which case we would paskin like the Tanakama Lekula, that it would only be an Issad Rabbanan at best, or whether it's a Machlokes Vechakak Stam, assuming that the Stam Mishnah in Orla would be the controlling Mishnah, not like the Ur Zavua, that the Mishnah Maseches Menachos establishes a contrary Stam Mishnah. So he says that that's the only reason that we follow the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer. But since the Shita of the Tanakama is out there, and it's a Shas Hadchak, so he says in a situation of a Shas Hadchak, where Chayev Shel Adam Tzluyei B'Shtiyah Shecha She'orim Shibol HaShual, everybody depends upon their beer made from barley and their Cheerios made from oats, Kedai Hu HaTanakama Lismoch Allah B'Shas Hadchak. So therefore, he says, we have a general principle you rely upon, Ashitas Yaakov B'Shas Hadchak, Kivin Olivska Halacha B'Ferish B'Gemara, Kirabi Eliezer. The Shakal and the Kudos HaKesev didn't like this in a big way. He said, we don't follow a Shita Siyakir and a Shas Hadchak if it's a Din D'Oraisa. But the Mishkanos Yaakov, who wrote a tshuva about this as well, says, no, that's not really true. First of all, it's not necessarily a din d'oraisa. It's a suffix, whether it's a din d'oraisa or not. And with the Shitas Yaakov is recorded because we haven't really completed our robust debate. Maybe if you would have a robust debate, so the Shita of the Tanakama would prevail when you would have a final vote upon the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer, and therefore you could rely upon it b'shas hadchak. The Mishnah Brura in a Simen Tov Pei Tes says, just as a matter of observation, even though he says the kulos are weak, the kulos are particularly weak, by the way, when it's not so hard, like nowadays, to research what is Chadash and what is Yashan. Now they have all of these extensive lists and they have all of these records of all of the plants. You can know what's produced from the winter wheat before that took root before Pesach and what was produced from the spring wheat after Pesach. This time of year, basically everything comes up Yashan, because after the second day of Pesach, whatever is the new crop is still in the ground and it is still growing and it hasn't been harvested yet. So from Pesach until pretty much the end of July, everything is Yashan. If you went to a kosher supermarket and they were charging you extra for something because they labeled it yashan, that would be highway robbery, because everything is yashan now. There's no way that something is not yashan. From now until pretty much the end of the summer, everything is yashan. So that's just something to bear in mind. Things only begin to become chadash, first the oats, the barley, you know, maybe late July, August, something like that. Then there are certain products like hard pretzels and things like that, which are typically always made from winter wheat. And then there are products like when you bake challah or you have pasta, where there's more of a tendency to make them from spring wheat. So there you have to follow the lists and things of that sort. But why then would people still be making them? So the Mishnah Berurah brings a couple of kulos. He says, well, one possible argument is if we assume like the Or Zeruah, the Chodesh and Chutz La'aretz is only Midrabanan, and you assume like Rabbeinu Baruch, that they only were goes there in those lands that are near Eretz Yisrael, like Mitzrayim and Babel. And secondly, he says that some people rely upon the Shita of the Bach, that it doesn't apply to Tfuah that grew a non-Jewish fields. But he says, Vinei, even though we can't really take issue with those who are lenient, because there were great gedolim who relied upon these leniencies in previous generations, but he says, if you are baal nefesh, you really shouldn't be somech on these teirim. He makes sure to use the lashon of the Bach, right? Be machmir la'atzmo, at least. Because according to the many, he doesn't attribute it to the Achronim, like the Shagas Aryeh. He says, many are Gedolei Rishonim, Rif Rush and the Rambam held that who Issa Daraisa B'chor Gavni. And then he goes a little bit further in the Be'er Halacha, where we sometimes have a question, are you allowed to be a hypocrite in your fulfillment of the Torah? So obviously, of course, we're not supposed to be a hypocrite, but sometimes it's not so bad to be a hypocrite if it means that you say, oh, I'm up to the middle of my Shmona Esrei, right? I remember when I was a young boy growing up in Muncie, so I heard a drasha from Rabbi Beryl Weinschlita once like this. I don't know, he was just giving a drasha in shul, and I was a little kid, you know, going there for a friend's bar mitzvah, and he said, it's okay to be a hypocrite if you find yourself in the middle of Shmona Esrei, and you have had zero kavana up until now, and you're halfway done, so you'll say to yourself, what kind of a hypocrite am I? I'm going to have kavana for the rest of Shmona, I didn't have a kavana for the first half. I'm not going to be hypocritical, so I'll just, you know, not have kavana. He says, no, it's okay to be a hypocrite in the sense of having kavana for the second half of Shmona Esrei. So it says the Be'er Halacha, this kind of hypocrisy you could have. He says, sometimes it's very, very difficult to be mekel, and you have to rely upon, sometimes it's hard to be machmir, excuse me, you have to rely upon the mekilim when it comes to things like the beer that's always grown from the new crop of barley, for example, at least in those days. However, he says, ein nachan adavar, t'chi b'shvil shekashlo lizar b'cholak, Chumos Yakel Legami, but you should be Mekel altogether. Lo Bekemach Nikal Nizayer. With respect to buying of the flour, it's not so hard to be careful to see that you're buying the flour, which happens to be winter wheat, and then just use that flour over the course of the entire Yekel. Yom Shematzu Bekol Mekomus Kemach Mikita Manisra Becheshvan. You can find winter wheat all over. So therefore, he says that even though there were those who were Mekel, even the Mekilim very often were only Blorotz Lahakel Besafik Velo Bebaide. They relied upon Safik. They relied upon robe. They relied upon spake. So therefore he says that you should, whenever it's possible to be machmir, you certainly should be machmir. So came along, in this country, nobody was being machmir for a Kaddish at all. And then came along with Aaron Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. Aaron Soloveitchik was asked to be the certifying rabbi of Streitz products, and he said, I'm not going to be a certifying rabbi unless all the flour is Yashin, because I believe that HaChadosh Asa Min HaTorah. The company agreed with Rav Aaron, and as a result, when he moved to Chicago, he convinced one of the local bakeries to become Yashin, and now in Chicago, there's a big sign up, I know, by one of the big bakeries in Chicago where I live, that says all of our products of Yashin always have been, always will be. And I say, what bakery in the world promotes this product? All of our products are old, okay? Always have been old and always will be old. And that's a point of pride. But that is a point of pride from a halakhic perspective, that it's all yashan and you don't have to worry about it. So therefore, nowadays, where it's not so hard even to figure out when you go to the store which flour, which cereals are yashan, because they have these cheat sheet guides. You can look at the Star K as a wonderful cheat sheet. It used to be that they had a yashan guide that was produced by a certain family. It was very hard to follow because you had to like follow hieroglyphics of different codes, and it was not everybody everybody was not so proficient at being able to like do all the mathematical calculations in their head or figure out even where to find the codes on the products. But now you have these cheat sheets, which basically just tell you that if the date, the expiration date is prior to this date, you're okay. If it's after this date, you're not okay. And you can really navigate things very well. But again, out of deference to my ancestor, I'm not going to go and say that people are doing the wrong thing if you're relying upon the Mekilim. They're very, very fine Gedolim. I mean, Gedolei Ador. Gedolei Ador in the past and Gedolei Ador Hayom, you know, Bizman Hazeh, who are very, very maker. Rav Soloveitchik was apparently leading it when it came to Chodesh as well. However, there is room, shall we say, for being more meticulous about this, relying and in deference or in concern for those shittos that really seem to be recorded in very prominent places like the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah that indicate that it's something that we should be worried about. At the same time, I'll just conclude with a very interesting statement from the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer, according to various sources that I've read, really was concerned about Chodesh. You'd figure who wouldn't be more concerned about Chodesh than the Chassam Sofer, who coined the phrase as kind of like making the statement in the Mishnah into a catchphrase of Chodesh Asam in the Torah b'chol makom. When it came to innovations by the Reform and by new groups within the Jewish community who wanted to move the Bima to the front of the shul rather than being in the middle of the shul, and other things which the Chassam Sofer said you have to be very, very careful about, because HaKlal HaChadosh Asar Min HaTorah B'chol Makom, and you can't allow changes in synagogue practice because these are newfangled things that you have to be very, very careful about and not changing ever. So the Chassam Sofer also did say, quoting his Rebbe, Rav Nosson Adler, that when you're reading the Aliyah in the Torah, which says, so don't give it to a person who's not scrupulous about keeping Chodesh. So, because you don't want the person to be made Eidus Sheker, Alatzmo, so they shouldn't be called for that Aliyah. Only call a person for that Aliyah if they're careful about only eating Yashin. That's kind of interesting. But at the same time, he also said, this was an incredible find. I don't know exactly how many people have like noticed this, but in the Chelek base of Yoredeya, Simon Yotes, he's talking about a criticism of the fact they were selling kishkas to non-Jews, and there was an issue with Avraham Menachai, separate discussion. But in the course of that discussion, he said, you should be very careful before you go and you critique people for relying upon various leniencies, because he says that HaChadosh Asam Min HaTorah works both ways. It means that you should not be so quick to introduce leniencies, but he also said you shouldn't be so quick to insist upon stringencies when people have been lenient about something in the past. So he says, "V'yanim v'yanki kashim me'od lishbo aminag Yisrael afilu lahakel." Look at how much the Rosh justified the people who didn't make a prusbol. And he says that I myself make a prusbol. And he says, and look how hard they worked to find various heterim of why it would be okay to eat Chodesh before the bringing of the Omer. So he says, yes, but he says, "Ein lemaya the chadish iser." He says that you don't be so quick to insist upon introducing new stringencies. I mean, koshik and heter, and certainly not to introduce a new heter. Kiminag Yisrael Torah, he says, the haklal, and then he applies to this entire discussion, both the introduction of new leniencies and also the introduction of insisting upon new stringencies, v'haklal hechodesh asa min haTorah b'chol makom. So with respect to criticizing those who are mekel b'chodesh, he actually applies the expression hechodesh asa min haTorah b'chol makom, incredibly enough. V'hayashin ha'miyushan ha'meshubach mimenu, and the yashin ha'miyushan is always the best thing, but of course, in this context, if you could keep both, you could respect the Mesorah, obviously, and not look down upon those to a mako, but also try to mimikayim what the Mishnah Berurah talks about already, especially since it's so easy nowadays to be more meticulous about eating yashan in chutz la'aretz. So I think that on the whole, that would be a good thing. Okay, stop here.